Hour number two of your Holiday Monday Overdrive. Scott MacArthur, Bruce Arthur of the Toronto Star. Condolences if you are pushing along in traffic on the southbound 400 or the westbound 401 heading back into the city from the east.
Nice day for it.
Yeah, this is always, I'm always happy to work this Holiday Monday.
Mm-hmm.
Because you, I mean, you got to make the decision well in advance.
Yep.
Because typically you get asked well in advance. And I just think you're hedging on the weather, Bruce. You never know what you're getting on Victoria Day weekend.
I once went camping with my wife before we had kids at Bon Echo Provincial Park. Beautiful place. I recommend everyone should go. Except if you go on the May long weekend, there's a chance that what will happen to you is what happened to us. Is that not just a rainstorm hit the park, a tornado touched down at one end of the park, which was not our end of the park, and the rain blew sideways either way. It was not pleasant. It was, however, memorable.
And you got through it.
It always rains on the May long weekend. Always, always, always. Maybe not always, but always.
There was a little bit on Saturday.
Yeah, I mean, it rained like for like a solid start to your Saturday in
right.
the afternoon.
Yeah,
where I was anyway.
But I'm always happy to work the Holiday Monday, and then you know you throw the Lou Day in summer.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
As I destroy the place. It's what the hell was that?
Just pieces falling off.
Knock something off the top of the mic stand here.
Mine is also loose, actually, now that I look at it.
There you go. Yeah. It's like you take that Lou Day in the summer, you go to Wonderland, something like that. So
yeah.
We're here. We're happy to be here. And if you are stuck in traffic, we're going to try our best to help you get through it. We got Campy Russell and Tim Kirchen in the 6 o'clock hour of the program. Pierre McGuire in just a couple of minutes. And Lou Lamoriello is apparently a New York Islander or about to become a New York Islander per Arthur Staples, so kind of the worst-kept secret in the hockey world over the last couple of weeks appears to be coming true. And you've got the Vegas Golden Knights going to the Stanley Cup Final. You've got Tampa Bay into Washington tonight for Game 6. The Bolts lead that series 3-2. Before we get to Pierre, on the Tampa-Washington front, because we haven't touched on this, Bruce, if the Caps go out, how do you view their season? Because they have been bigger favorites in the past mm-hmm. and disappointed. They slayed the Sid Penguins Dragon this year.
Mm-hmm.
And then, because remember, it isn't necessarily sometimes that you win or that you lose. It's how it happens. If they lose this series to Tampa Bay, they will have done so having won the first two games of the series on the road. Therefore, I think setting a higher expectation for the end result.
Yeah.
It's hard not to look at that as extreme disappointment.
Best season of the Ovi era, and they blew it, is how you would look at it, right? Because they beat Pittsburgh, and all the demons were released, and they got to sing hallelujah, and they've been better than Tampa in a lot of games in this series. You know what this series started to remind me of in Game 4? A lot of those years where Washington was clearly the better team and got beat by a goalie or got beat because they couldn't finish, lost 2-1 in the Game 7 to Henrik Lundqvist again and again, or like all those years, the Yaroslav Halak year, that's what that game looked like. And when Ovi broke his stick over the net after the game, I thought, oh, these guys know they just missed one.
And I mentioned that the other day on Friday. I said, when I saw him slam his stick, I said, there's frustration there. It's almost like you wonder if they know.
It's a game they should have won. They can win Game 6, absolutely. They've been really good in this series.
All right, joining us now on the Maple Toyota Hotline, our buddy from the NHL on NBC, Pierre McGuire. Happy long weekend, even though it isn't one in the U.S., Pierre. And let's start with Vegas. This, to me, is one of the greatest stories in the history of North American professional sports. Agree or disagree?
Agree. Absolutely. Scott, nice to chat with you, by the way, and nice to talk with you, Bruce. Totally concur. And I think the biggest reason why is the vision of ownership with Mr. Foley and the Maloof brothers, and then obviously Murray Craven, who was kind of the conduit between the non-hockey side and the hockey side, and putting together a really good search committee to come up with George McPhee and to come up with Gerard Gallant. But the biggest thing is how they drafted their players at the expansion draft. Character, coachability, and more than anything else, speed.
Mm-hmm.
If you had those three ingredients, you were getting drafted by them. If you didn't have any one of the three, you weren't. They weren't taking you. It was that simple. And they've done a fantastic job implementing their vision, and that's a big part of running a successful program in the NHL today.
Pierre, when you look at this, we're like, now they're in the Stanley Cup final. None of us, I think, have fully grasped the implications of all this, but everyone's trying to figure out what's the lesson, right? Like, what's the lesson to the league, to hockey, to whatever it is? And when you look at this Vegas team, what do you see as kind of the overarching lesson of how they've been so successful and what it means?
Well, what I just talked about, Bruce, I think more than anything else, is they had a vision and they implemented their vision. And again, coachability is a big part of this thing. They didn't just go for talented players, and there were some exposed to them. Mm-hmm. They went for guys that they thought, Pierre-Edward Belmar is a perfect example of that. How many people outside of Leksand, Sweden, Skellefteå, Sweden, Rouen, France, and Philadelphia would even know who he is?
Mm-hmm.
Nobody. Thomas Nosek, outside of people in Pardubice in the Czech Republic and Grand Rapids in Michigan, nobody would know who Thomas Nosek is. So you can go around their team. They had a plan. And more than anything else, they didn't deviate from their plan. You know, ownership didn't meddle in their plan. They had quiet confidence. And the biggest thing is they established the face of their franchise early, and it was Marc-Andre Fleury.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was there to host their season ticket holder party the night of the expansion draft. There were 14,000 people in the building when I hosted it. And you couldn't believe the thundering ovation for Marc-Andre Fleury when he came on stage. It was overwhelming. It really was.
When you look at how other general managers approached the expansion draft and the guys they lost, and some of them you can say in hindsight, oh, or you could say at the time, that was a mistake. How much of this do you think was errors by other general managers in addition to Vegas knowing what they wanted and being able to pull it together?
Combination of both. Great question, well phrased. And here's the biggest thing, Bruce. I think paralysis through overanalysis.
Mm-hmm.
I talked to one manager who will remain nameless, and he said, why are we overthinking this? I'm only going to lose one player. Why am I going to panic? I'm going to lose one player. I'm not going to lose five. Why am I going to pay them a bounty so that they don't take player A or they don't take player B? I should have enough in reserve so that it shouldn't be a problem. And I think a lot of teams either internally overhype some of their own players,
mm-hmm.
or they made miscalculations on players internally, and that happens a lot because you always overvalue your own players just because they've grown up with you. You drafted them, you cultivated them, you developed them, you signed them, all that stuff. So you develop an affinity to your own players, and you usually overhype them. But I think it's a combination of both things that you presented. But more than anything else, the teams that went into it with the philosophy is, we're only going to lose one player. We're not going to lose draft picks. We're not going to lose prospects because we want to protect other guys. If you went in with the philosophy only losing one player, you made out okay. If you went in with a philosophy, I got to protect this guy so I'll pay a little bounty to keep him, you got yourself into trouble.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's losing two assets for the price of one, right? Like when you could have just left one. We've seen that. We saw that across the league. And whenever we actually look at all the worst decisions from other GMs, they're exactly as you described here.
Yeah, no, I mean, listen, a couple friends of mine who run teams, would call you up and say, what do you think of this player? What do you think of that player? Do you think he'll get taken? Pittsburgh, they did it the way they knew they had to do it. They knew they were going to have cap-related issues. They knew that Matt Murray was coming up through their system. They knew they had Casey DeSmith. They knew they had Tristan Jarry. They knew they were stockpiled in goal. They didn't want to let Marc-Andre Fleury go, but they said, inevitably, that's the player we're going to lose. We know that. So we're not going to do any other deals with them. That's the player we're going to lose. That's what's going to happen. It's unfortunate, but that's what's going to happen. So they didn't touch into their reserves, which was really smart by them. You know, Mark's played great. There's no question about it. But long-term, with cap-related issues and everything else, they did the right thing.
With Pierre Maguire. And Pierre, sometimes it isn't even necessarily cap-related issues, but it is salary-related issues. Like if I'm the Florida Panthers, right, and I feel I've overpaid Riley Smith, I've got to cough up a 30-goal score to ensure that Vegas takes Riley Smith's contract. Then Riley Smith shows up in Vegas and has himself a year and has himself a playoff.
Part of the problem is the man you were dealing with knew both sides of the deal. Gerard Gallant knew about Jonathan Marchessault, and he knew about Riley Smith. That was a big problem. He knew exactly what he was going to get out of Riley Smith, mm-hmm. and he was very, very comfortable telling George McPhee and Kelly McCrimmon, get this guy, because I'm telling you, I know how to stoke his fire. I can get him to another level. And sure enough, he has. And Riley's really thrived there, you know, with Carlson and with Marsh. So that line's outstanding. It's outstanding. It's not a little bit good. It's really good. So, again, this is part of it. You know, again, everybody's marveling at Nate Schmidt. Nate Schmidt's not a one-trick pony that George McPhee just found on the turnip truck.
Mm-hmm.
Nate Schmidt was signed out of the University of Minnesota after playing in St. Cloud and Green Bay, in the USHL, excuse me. And then all of a sudden, Nate Schmidt is signed by Washington as an undrafted player who happened to be an All-American. So George McPhee knew everything about this player. And George was like, I'm taking this guy as a free agent because Washington's not going to sign him. You know, so again, if you look at the players, Ryan Reeves, the guy that gets the series-winning goal yesterday, how does he end up there at the trade deadline? Because Kelly McCrimmon had him with the Brandon Wheat Kings. The sense of familiarity, and it goes back to the three characteristics we talked about. If you weren't coachable, if you didn't have character, and you didn't have speed, you weren't playing for them.
With Pierre McGuire of the NHL on NBC, Scott MacArthur, Bruce Arthur on the Holiday Monday edition of Overdrive. You're listening to TSN 1050. Gerard Gallant is a coach who's been celebrated in hockey circles for a number of years now, Pierre, and a lot of people expressed dismay, I think quite rightly so, at the way that the Florida Panthers let him go in late November of 2016. He said something publicly last week, and again, whatever a guy says publicly, I think a lot of times we can throw it in the garbage and kind of ignore it because it's more important what happens within the confines of a team locker room, that dynamic. But, and I'm paraphrasing here because I don't have the clip right beside me, but Gallant was asked at his daily media conference about player accountability, about players being accountable to him when they make mistakes. And he said, if you go through the tape of a 60-minute hockey game, you're going to see mistakes by both teams on each and every shift. And my focus is on ensuring that these guys play relaxed and comfortable enough that they know that if they make a mistake, hey, just go out on the next shift and do it differently, be better. And you don't hear a lot of that talk publicly from coaches, but I found that to be very progressive, and in this day and age where millennials ingest information and need to be treated differently than maybe generations before, I thought it was pretty refreshing.
Oh, absolutely, and that goes back to his time in the Quebec Major Junior League when he won a Memorial Cup, and he did some amazing things there. So, no, there's no question that that's a big part of it. I would totally concur with that, Scott. I think the biggest thing, though, with millennials in particular, they're audio learning disabled. They do better with video. And so when you show video, you don't have to talk a lot. And these guys, for whatever reason, they grasp things. Children, I'm saying, the young ones coming in the league today, they grasp things easier when they see them rather than when they hear about them. And so the less you say as a coach now, the better. It really is. Watch John Cooper tonight behind the Tampa bench. He may not even talk to his players. You know, he might talk to the referee, he might talk to his assistant coaches, but there's very little communication with his players except next guy up. That's about it. And again, he would know about this generation, and I think it's one of the reasons why some guys are thriving with the younger generations, and other guys, especially, you know, the guys that are a little bit older, have been around, they don't do as well.
Pierre, when we look on the other side of the bracket, Washington in this series, we were just talking before you got on, they look like they've been the better team in a lot of this series. Not the whole of it, but a lot of it. It's easy to say that the ghosts are back, right? That they've managed to find a way to lose, even though that they probably should have won. Where do you see Washington right now going into Game 6?
I think there's trepidation around their team. I think there's trepidation around their building, Bruce. They have to have a lightning quick start, no pun intended. And if they don't, that's going to be a problem here. You know, it started to creep into this thing in game four, when their power play went a little bit helter-skelter and the fans started to boo a little bit. And it's the first time I've actually heard that in this building in a while, especially mm-hmm. in a playoff game. So that was a little bit disconcerting. The one thing I'd say is you just touched on it, which I thought was a really good point. The truth of the matter is Washington's outshot Tampa in every single game in this series. So here we are in game six. Tampa's not played an A game. They haven't played one game where you could say, man, that's an A game. Now, I did all of their games with the Bruins, except for game one, which wasn't an A game for them, but an A game for the Bruins. They played a bunch of A games in that series. They really did, including game two, where they were absolutely phenomenal and planted a seed of doubt for the Bruins. But I would say the big thing that worries me, it's not so much about Washington, is that Tampa's yet to play an A game, and you got to think at some point they're going to play an A game. Mm-hmm. And if that's tonight, that's a problem for Washington.
Yeah. And I mean, they slayed, and I'm talking about the Caps, Pierre, they slayed the Sid Pittsburgh Dragon, and we thought, okay, I mean, and then they win the first two games on the road. And just as you were coming on, Bruce brought up the Ovi stick over the crossbar when they lost game four and coughed up the two games of home ice advantage that they'd secured by winning the first two games of the series. How would you view this Washington season if it ends tonight? I mean, they accomplished a lot. They were not the favorites that they seem to have been year over year in the past. And yet, you win the first two games on the road in the Eastern Conference Final. At that point, you got to be expecting to make it to the Stanley Cup Final.
Yeah, you got to be expecting, but it doesn't happen. The last team that went down 0-2 in a series and won the series in the Conference Final was our 91 Penguins team. And that's because we had games 3 and 4 at home. So for Tampa, if they pull this off, it's something that hasn't happened in a while. Obviously, you would expect more out of Washington because they were up 2-0 and they won the first two games in Tampa. But, Bruce, here's the one thing I would say. The fact that they're in the conference final is huge. And here are some of the losses they had to overcome. Nate Schmidt, we've already talked about him having phenomenal playoff. He would help this team a lot. Carl Alzner, I know people in Montreal would beg to differ with me. He was a tremendous Washington Capital. He fit in seamlessly here. He and John Carlson were a great tandem together. Kevin Shattenkirk was excellent on the power play here, and he took a lot of pressure off of John Carlson when he was here. And Justin Williams was an outstanding contributor to this Washington Capitals team. So they've overcome the loss of four really important players to their program, and I think Barry Trotz done a fantastic job with this team to overcome those four losses. So the fact they're in the Eastern Conference Finals has been huge. But here's the thing that excites me the most. Alexander Ovechkin has taken over this team. Yes, he's been the captain for a long time, but he cares as much or more than I've ever seen him care, and everybody is relishing his enthusiasm and his energy that he's presented to each guy on the team. He is leading by example, and he cares about the well-being of this franchise.
Well, one thing that he was asked this morning, is this the biggest game of your career? And he said, yeah, probably it is. And it probably is, because he's been in Game 7s. He's been in Game 7s against Pittsburgh. Like, I still think that they might have lost the Stanley Cup in Game 7 against Pittsburgh last year. But this game, we're talking about how Ovi is redefining himself as a player. This is a put-up game. He doesn't have to score, but he has to be an impact player in some way, doesn't he?
Completely and utterly agree, Bruce. And here are the other ones that I think have been really important. Game 7, Pittsburgh, you already touched on that, not once, but a couple times. Game 7, 2010 against Montreal. Montreal won in here with 14 shots on goal in a mm-hmm. Game 7. I did the game with Gord Miller. It was unbelievable to see how Montreal won that game. But Jaro Halak made a gigantic difference. And the quarterfinal game in the Olympics in 2010 against Canada, that was as savage a beatdown as I've ever seen in best-on-best in an international competition. Mm-hmm. I mean, Canada just savaged them, and Ovechkin was a big part of that beatdown. I'm telling you, he was. So, he's had a lot of big games, but this is one where I think if he stands up and delivers and the rest of the guys follow, we could be looking at a Game 7. But as I said earlier, I mean this, Scott, and I mean this, Bruce, Tampa has yet to play an A game, and they know it as a group. They know it as a group. If they do play an A game tonight, I don't even know if whatever Washington does matters.
Pierre, as you know, in these parts, we are discussing, debating any and all moves the Maple Leafs could make in the offseason to improve the spots on their roster that are so completely and totally obvious to all of us. And I think a lot of us are intrigued at the way Kyle Dubas is going to go about this and just how creative he may get. But because we're talking Washington right now, John Carlson, I would think, is the highest profile right shot defenseman who's going to hit the UFA market this summer. If he's a 7-7 guy, so 7-49-ish, if that's what it's going to take to secure him. Give me the pros and the cons of a deal like that for the Leafs or for anybody.
Well, let's start first with level of familiarity. The guy that brought him into the Ontario Hockey League was Mark Hunter with the London Knights. He would know him as well or better than anybody. So that's a positive. You're going to know your strengths and weaknesses internally right away. Number two, and this is really important, John Carlson is not a great defender. And I think everybody that does evaluation for a living knows that. But what he is he's a competent offensive player that overcomes those defensive shortcomings. You know, in game number five the other day down in Tampa, he had over 25 minutes on ice. He was a plus player, and he had 9 shots on goal. Yeah, there are not a lot of defensemen doing that stuff. So he's got a rocket ship for a shot. He can play with skilled players. He makes a very good first pass. I think you're being a little bit light on the money. I talked to a general manager the other day, Scott. Most guys are thinking that marketplace going closer to $8 or $9 million a year, just because of what you said, the right-handed shot defenseman. There are not a lot of luxury items like that on the market, so there's going to be a premium to pay, and it'll be interesting to see who's prepared to pay that premium. I think $7 million a year is light on him.
All right, well, dinner on John Carlson then when he gets that when he gets that new contract. Lots of traction today, Pierre. In fact, the news kind of began to trickle out just before Bruce and I got on the air. Arthur Staple, who covers the Islanders, reporting that it's just a matter of time here now. It's when, not if, Lou Lamoriello takes over as director of hockey operations. There was a report out of Quebec late last week that Lou has, in fact, met with John Tavares already, presumably as a representative of the Islanders. Sit here right now and still presume Lou to be an employee of the Maple Leafs. So who the heck knows really where it all goes? But what does this mean for the Islanders if it's true? And what effect do you perceive Lou's exodus having on the Maple Leafs front office?
I think everybody kind of knew that Lou was going to be taking a step backwards when Kyle Dubas was named general manager. That's not a knock on Kyle either or on Mark Hunter. I think what'll be interesting to see is, you know, whether they can keep Mark Hunter there or not. But again, I don't think that's a knock on Kyle. And a lot of people are prejudging Kyle. I think it's grossly unfair. He deserves an opportunity to run his team, see what he can do. He's been a part of the fabric of building the team up. They obviously had a lot of building to do. They still got a lot of building to do, but he's been part of it. That's a positive, so it's all good there. In terms of Lou, I spent a lot of time with him during the first round of the playoffs. I was surprised he wasn't back as the manager, but the fact that he wasn't back as a manager, I'm not surprised that he's back running a team. The one thing that we never heard of was whether the Islanders asked for permission, and if they did ask for permission, it's typical Lamorellian way. It never broke. It never got out. So that's pretty interesting. He'll do a lot to help the Islanders, but here's the biggest conundrum for him. You've talked about it already. What happens with John Tavares, and I think it's a stretch to say that he's going to stay, and how are they going to get a building built? Everybody's talked about the building. The problem is the state of New York still has not approved their plan to build at Belmont. That's a big issue, and they were supposed to have already broken ground on that. They have not broken ground on that. So you're looking at a minimum of 3 years. I call him Coach Lamoriello. Coach Lamoriello is 75 years old. He'll be closer to 79 if the building gets built in 3 years and they still don't have a shovel in the ground. You know, I don't know how much he's going to help them, but they got to get a building built. And if they do, then it can help them significantly.
Always good to catch up here. Thanks so much for this, and enjoy the Stanley Cup Final.
Thanks a lot, Scott. I appreciate it. Really nice visiting with you. Bruce, great talking. Will I see you at the final, Bruce?
We're going to have to see, Pierre.
Uh-oh. I got you.
Long story, buddy.
Have a good one. Take care, boys.
See you, man.
Pierre McGuire joining us on the Maple Toyota Hotline. Maple Toyota takes away the fears of buying a pre-owned vehicle by sharing service history, lien history, and accident history. Visit MapleToyota.com. Toronto FC with a big win the other night over Orlando City FC. That was down at BMO Field. The Reds are an injured bunch. They didn't have Seba Jovinko because he had had a red card a couple of games ago, so he was suspended. Still, they got it done. They're slowly but surely climbing the Eastern Conference standings after a slow league start, which was the result of A, the injuries, but also B, the required focus on the CONCACAF Champions League, which they almost won. Their head coach, Greg Vanney, is Bruce's and my guest on Overdrive, TSN 1050. We haven't gotten to any Blue Jays discussion, 90 minutes into a 180-minute show here, Bruce.
Not on the air.
Yeah, not on the air. Off the air, there have been some discussions.
Some stuff.
Painful, I believe, was the term used by John Gibbons to describe the weekend that was.
Not just the weekend, I would think. There's a lot of pain going on.
Pretty much of the last 2.5-3 weeks. Oh, and this day and age, as Mickey Mantle is showing up in town tomorrow night. His name is Mike Trout, and he's not even the most famous guy on the team.
No.
The LA Angels right now. That would be, and people scream at me because they mishear me when I say this. I call him Babe Ruth because he does what Babe Ruth did, not because he's had the career Babe Ruth had.
Mm-hmm.
Shohei Ohtani.
Yeah.
He's not going to pitch, at least he's not scheduled to in this series. He's supposed to make a start this weekend at Yankee Stadium, but he is going to designate a hit.
Mm-hmm.
The show's coming to town, man. And the Jays, if they're going to be at all relevant, which is a dwindling thing, are going to have to get back on the horse starting tomorrow night. Speaking of getting back on the horse, Toronto FC starting to roll along here a little bit. They've got some significant injuries, but starting to get some bodies back. The focus back on league play now after the CONCACAF Champions League, and they racked up a pretty big victory over Orlando City to kick off the weekend. Greg Vanney is their head coach, you know that, and he joins us now. Mr. Vanney, how are you?
Hey guys, I'm well, how are you?
We're doing excellent. Happy holiday long weekend, and we appreciate your time. Big win for the guys the other night, I think. We'll just use that as a starting point. Seba wasn't available because he was red carded the match prior. You're starting to get some bodies back. Does it feel like the flow is sort of returning to the group here now as you push through league play?
Yeah, we're getting there. I mean, it's from an injury standpoint, it just seems like it's been certain positions that have been hit the hardest. Obviously, our back line, it was our center backs at first. Now our left back position is a little dinged up. But we're starting to get center backs back. So it's a process. And, you know, as I said a couple of weeks ago, the key here is to not lose guys as we're getting guys back. So hopefully we can get it whole here pretty soon. But, as you mentioned, it was an important win on the weekend just, to get momentum shifting in our direction. And, to win at home is always important for us. So, from our perspective, we also now have a full week of training for a game. It seems like every week has been an abbreviated week. So we've been able to get proper rest this week, and now we'll start to approach our normal lead up to games. So that's also a good thing for us.
I was going to ask you about that, Greg. And how, beyond the injuries, and not just the injuries, but the injuries to the guys you've had getting hurt, how much of a challenge and how has it affected you to have to balance the CONCACAF campaign and the MLS campaign kind of at the same time? It seems like that's kind of a lot for any club to take on.
Yeah, it's been a challenge, probably far greater than we had initially anticipated. And I think, I think a lot of it had to do with our draw, having to play in Colorado, then going down to Mexico three times after that. That's really unusual in CONCACAF. So I think that has a little bit to do with it. Also, within our league schedule, we had to take two of our long trips, one of them to Colorado, one of them to Houston. Those are pretty long road trips for MLS, and to have those in the middle of CONCACAF just meant more travel for us. So things have been disjointed, I would say, on the league front. So now we're getting back to it. Everybody's focused on it. The problem is we just got to get our guys back. So from a selection standpoint, we can start to put guys in their natural positions. We saw a little bit of that against Orlando. So obviously getting Seba back from red card will also help our cause. But, you know, it's just been a very disjointed start to the year in terms of league, and managing both it was a challenge, but for us, it was well worth it to go for it. We were, you know, we were one play away from winning the CONCACAF championship, and we were all in it for that. So, we'll get ourselves turned around and focused now on the league, and we'll start to make our progress up the table as we can continue to get healthy and get results.
With Toronto FC head coach Greg Vanney.
Part of the way you guys threw so much into CONCACAF, which you obviously should have, could you afford to do that because you thought you had enough to catch up into the season if you did have a tough start to the MLS campaign?
Yes, I think that's fair. I think we believe in the depth of our team. I don't think we ever could have imagined the physical toll it would have taken, you know, coming out of it. I don't know that we would have done anything any differently, again, because the ambition of our club is to try to be the best in every possible level that we can compete in, and something that nobody has done in MLS is win the championship. So I can't say that we would have done anything any differently from a league standpoint. We tried to rest players along the way where we felt like we could, or we needed to, I should say, not even could. But even then, we still were running guys on low. So it was, we believe for sure that you know, we have the firepower and the team to get back into the playoff race, and we'll see where we are as we go, and if even Supporter Shield or those types of things are even in the equation. We don't talk about those things now. We talk about the next game and concentrating and getting as many people ready as we can to play in the next match, which is, you know, coming up again on Friday.
Greg, and I know you don't want to belabor the CONCACAF situation, but I mean, what you guys accomplished was incredible, mm-hmm. and was almost historic, obviously, for Major League Soccer. I sit back, and I had the opportunity to be at a lot of your home games through the Champions League, and the environment was awesome. But do you, and I know you don't want to discredit Guadalajara or whatever the case may be, but do you think to yourself something like, if we just had a Victor Vasquez healthy? Or do you not allow yourself to go down that road?
No. I mean, I've thought about it through the tournament that we were able to accomplish some pretty incredible results along the way and throughout the tournament with a fair amount of guys. Victor having played very minimal. Again, our center back situation was dwindling throughout the course of the event. So I more think of it in terms of, if we could have just made one more play, right? Would that have been, whether that means prevented one goal in that last stretch or finished one chance off that we had, it was, for me, just that's how close we were. We were one play away from winning the championship. Obviously, having a guy like Victor helps you to create more plays. So that probably would have helped our cause. But in the grand scheme of things, I think, you know, it was, you endure these tournaments or these league seasons, and you can't always pick and choose what's going to happen. You just have to do it. And our guys stepped out there, and whatever the circumstances, I mean, we went down to Mexico three times, and we're leading three times in Mexico against three of the biggest clubs in Mexico, which has never really been done before in the league and from MLS's perspective. And so we did a lot of great things. It's behind us now, but we're proud of our run. We wish we would have come up with one more play, and all of our focus now is back onto, you know, what's ahead of us.
Greg, you talked about the physical toll that the parallel campaigns kind of took. Yeah. Do you think that the fact that you guys lost a championship match, you won a championship match, and then played in probably one of the biggest games that you guys are, or at least that an MLS team can play in, how much of an emotional hangover do you think there was when you come down from that back into the regular old MLS season?
Well, I think inevitably, there is an emotional hit to not winning the championship. I think there would be one if we did win it. I think it would be either way, when this tournament ended, there was going to be some sort of emotional response to the end of that event. Because I honestly felt like that event was a little bit of a carryover from last year's success. And let's see if we can win all four trophies that we were playing for in some way, shape, or form. So I always felt like there was going to be some emotional repercussion for at the end of this tournament. And to be fair, I think the guys handled it pretty well. I think the unfortunate part is we came out of the tournament and we got into MLS play. And I thought we started the Chicago game, which was our first game back, great. We're up 2-0. And the very dying minutes, You know, we give away a goal to give away 2 points. I think if we get that result and we have a couple things go our way and or we make a couple things go our way, I think we the frustration would be a little less from the loss of the championship, and we would be kind of riding a little bit smoother in the league. But a couple things didn't go our way and or we missed opportunities, and then you add a couple losses at the end of, you know, losing a championship, and then frustration mounts a little bit. And so it exacerbates the fact that you lost that championship. But I think, again, I think we're turning the corner as we saw, you know, more guys coming back into the team and getting a result this week. I think this is where the group is in a good place. It's just about moving forward now.
With Toronto FC head coach Greg Vanney, this is Overdrive on your holiday Monday, TSN 1050. Are you confident, Greg, that Jozy Altidore is 3 weeks to maybe a month away? Because I think he was 4 to 6 weeks at the time of the foot surgery.
Yeah, we'll have to see. I'm confident that he's going to get through it. He's doing, you know, some good work in the gym now and getting himself, keeping his fitness levels up and doing a lot of his strengthening and you know, as if Jozy needs more size, he's he's doing his lifting work. But you know, really, what it'll come down to is the healing of the incisions that the doctors had to make in the foot. And because it's a foot and it's about kicking the ball, I don't really know what that will look like. And we won't really know until he starts to get a shoe on and he starts to do things. But, you know, it'll take as long as it takes. I know Josie's fighting to get back as quickly as possible. And, you know, we're looking forward to getting him back. So, you know, hopefully things go smooth in the return and we can get him back quickly.
All right. You're probably going to have a barbecue or something here in the not too distant future to celebrate the Victoria Day holiday.
We are, as a matter of fact. We are.
See, I
had a question about
you're a
that,
Canadian
actually.
Now. You're a Canadian yeah. now.
As a fellow father of four,
yes.
Like, I know that one of the things that I strive for in my life is balance. I want to be there, but I also have a fairly demanding job that'll take as much as I can give it, kind of. And you have that plus. Has this year been? Has it been hard to kind of achieve balance for you?
At times, yeah. It's just, I mean, we've been so busy and away so much that trying to find those moments has been a challenge in and of itself. I'm trying to be where I can as much as I can. But I think now we're settling in. As we get a little closer to the World Cup break, we'll have a little bit of time. We don't have a lot of time, but a little bit of time to maybe separate for a couple hours or a couple days and spend a little time with the family. But my guys manage my kids all are super busy too with sports and everything that they're doing. So I try to get to everything I can.
No, I was setting up the barbecue thing. You know, you're going to chill here in a few minutes. And I was going to bring up a topic that might give you that little twitch beneath your eye. Okay. Greg, let's have the conversation about video assistant referee.
Here we go. Okay.
And you know what? I mean, I honestly don't think that this is specific to Major League Soccer, to the sport right. of soccer in general. We talk about it all the time with regard to the NHL and offside and stuff like that.
Yeah.
This is supposed to be a supremely objective thing that sometimes falls into subjectivity, and therefore it is grossly frustrating when it doesn't go your way, but it should. I was at your game against the Sounders a couple of weeks ago, and their second goal looked to be offside. I mean, it just how frustrating has the implementation of this and when it's used and when it isn't been?
But, you know, I will say I agree with you. I think there's still such a level of subjectivity, even when they talk about the standard, which is clear and obvious for, and I keep saying this, what's clear and obvious for me might be different for you and for somebody else. And as I watch games around the league, the referees who actually employ the VAR, because the VAR is just a tool. It's how our officials actually use it and how they determine some of these subjective calls. You know, it's trying to gauge exactly how it's going to be used exactly, even though we've been told many times, but also what are the standards that we're all seeing is kind of equal along the way. And so it's really difficult. And it's, I think, you know, for a lot of the coaches, players, even the officials, I think at times it's been a frustrating process trying to find the right balance of how much it should be involved and how much it maybe shouldn't be involved. What's clear and obvious, what isn't clear and obvious, you know, for us. You know, on my count, we've had 3 games that have involved VAR and decisions that have led to, you know, either results have gone one way or possible in this last game, even the Saint goal that was called back, he's at, in my opinion, and based on the way the offside rule is written, he was in an offside position, but the defender makes a touch on the ball, an intentional touch on the ball, which then brings the Saint back onside. So it should have been a goal. We should have been up 2-0. So these moments keep happening where there's a disagreement between us, you know, as coaches and players and the officials who are trying to employ this. It becomes a frustrating mix. And I'm watching a lot of games around the league, and I can tell this is still a work in progress to figure out what it is, because there's so many subjective calls that are still being reviewed and could be argued one way or another.
See, I was going to say,
I like the goal line technology. It's very clear. It's either across the line or it's not. You know, some of these other things they're close and really tough to say.
Now, for a second there, I thought you were going to say that there's a conspiracy against Toronto FC on behalf of Major League Soccer, and I'm glad you backed away from that, Greg, because that could have been trouble.
I would never say that.
Greg, thanks so much for your time. Enjoy the lovely evening with the family, and I hope we can catch up again soon.
Thank you. Anytime, guys. I appreciate it.
Greg Vanney is the head coach of Toronto FC.
And fellow father of four. I have high respect for him for that.
Very demanding on your time, I'm guessing, Bruce.
It's a lot of kids, man.
We could do the third hour of Overdrive just having you...
Just talk about kids.
You could just read your schedule out to us, how you balance it all.
There's a lot. I used to look very young.
It's not an age thing, eh? It's a number of kids thing, is that it?
It's not the, what is it? It's the mileage, right?
Yes.
The mileage.
It's the wear and the tear.
Yeah.
Campy Russell, Cavs legend, Fox Sports Ohio pregame and postgame TV analyst. It's the Cavs and the Celts game four. So you had, of course, Boston step up to the 2-0 lead at home, take care of home court. Cleveland does the exact same thing in very loud fashion in game three. Can LeBron and the guys pull even? We'll talk to Campy. Tim Kirkjian, to spin you around Major League Baseball, the Angels are coming to town. That is Trout. That is Ohtani. That is the historic but declining Pujols, and that is a team that the Blue Jays, at the very least, are hoping to compete with the second wildcard spot, but based on the way the Blue Jays are playing, doesn't seem like there will be any wildcard spots in their immediate future. The 3 o'clock hour of Overdrive with Scott MacArthur, Bruce Arthur, coming up, TSN 1050. Scott MacArthur, Bruce Arthur. If you're stuck in traffic, hang with us. We're with you until 7 o'clock. Tim Kirkjian of ESPN for a little ball talk at the top of the hour. And, Bruce, I was never truly excited about the Blue Jays' start, but the one thing that I said at the time was that this team was not going to be as bad as a lot of people believed they would be. And I felt like I at least had some time bought for me on that take when the Jays got out of the gate.
Well, I mean,
and
they put what they did in the first, whatever it was, 20, 25, even 30 games, they put money in the bank, right? Like they made a deposit against themselves. They hit for a while. Like that was surprising, I think, to everybody. I don't think anyone saw the pitching blowing up like this.
Oh,
like not just one guy. But like it's like dominoes falling, right? And that's where you die. And the decision on this group's been put off for a long time, like probably like 2 years now. It's kind of been, they've kicked the can down the road. Try to keep the whole thing aloft as long as you can. Try to keep getting 45,000 people into the dome when you can, and keep the TV ratings between 700,000 and a million. And at this point, the fuse has been lit. Like the dynamite, the charges have been set. It's just a matter of how they blow it up and when.
And I think a lot of that, there are some obvious upcoming free agents that we don't think as much about, whether that's a Jay Happ or whether that's a Marco Estrada. And I think there are assets you could get for those two guys. But the headliner on that list, Bruce, is Josh Donaldson.
Yeah. And how's that going?
I mean, let's be honest. It's not been good, and it's not been good since opening day, when he couldn't throw the ball across the diamond from third to first base.
Yep.
And it still looks to me, in watching him play, like he's short-arming it a little bit, which tells me that something isn't right. I don't know what that is, And I'm not talking off of any internal knowledge or anything other than just me watching and speculating off of that. And the other thing is, he's not hitting worth a crap.
Mm-hmm.
So here you have a guy, and it's May the 21st, who you need to trade at some point in the next 70-ish days.
Yep.
And what's the value for an impending free agent, as good as he's been, who isn't very good right now for whatever reason?
I had a smart guy tell me in like 2016, if these guys are smart, they'll put Donaldson on the market at the deadline, because like that's where this is going. And if you trade him in 2016, you're trading an MVP or an MVP candidate,
and
with 2 years left of control. Like, you've got three postseasons you're trading. What do you get for an MVP with three postseasons left?
But they did end up making the playoffs in 2016, though.
They did. Made it harder, in which case last year was the year. And he got hurt. Missed 50 games. Right? Like, that's... But now you're getting to a point where a big part of managing a team is selling assets at the right time. And sometimes you're lucky, sometimes you're good. A little bit of both. In this case, it's not a penny stock, but this is not a guy who teams can look at and say, he's definitely Josh Donaldson right now.
Right, and I've been on the Call Vlad up train, and I haven't been ranting and raving about that because I haven't been on my own show since Thursday, which, mm-hmm. of course, was turned out to be the first of four consecutive days that they lost to the Oakland Athletics.
Oh, good team.
But it's very clear now,
yeah.
or at least it seems to be, where this is all headed, and it's not good because you don't know when you're getting Marcus Stroman and those types of guys back, and
you don't know what you're getting back.
I'm looking at dwindling attendance, and I understand that there are reasons for that that may be more complicated than just the surface stuff. There's zero buzz around this team, and you don't make moves, and you don't have indecision one way or the other because you want to appease a fan base. But I'm telling you this. 3 years ago today, Bruce, Tulowitzki and Price hadn't been acquired. The so-called baseball renaissance hadn't happened,
mm-hmm.
and it feels like we're falling back away from that love-in we had with the game.
The decision to blow up this team should have been a year and a half ago, and Mark Shapiro said that out loud, that if not for the fans, he would have done it. It's no way to run a business.
Hour 3 of Overdrive starts now, TSN 1050.